Dark Wreath Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. Autumn semester 2009, this is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 7. Lecture 4, delivered on August 27, 2009. The title of this lecture is Interest Rates and the Federal Reserve System.
Today, interest rates and the Federal Reserve System. In the sense that the 800-pound gorilla of financial intermediaries is the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is at the center of the banking system of the United States. How do I know that? Because it is the central bank of the United States. So if you say central bank, that sort of gives you the impression that it's at the center of the financial system. Essentially, in many ways, right now especially, the Federal Reserve is dominating the interest rate environment of the country. However, over a longer period of time, other forces will come to bear and swamp out government efforts to maintain interest rates at specific target levels. Right now, the federal funds rate, the rate at which banks lend to each other, which is not controlled by the Fed, but the Fed has power over it, is sitting at a value as far as interest rates go. Well, what, let me ask you, do you know what the federal funds rate is, the Fed funds rate right now is? Approximately zero. See, here's an interesting thing. 0% interest, I thought that was just on phony car loans. But here we have, as a matter of fact, some of my former students who now work in the financial sector, one of them said that she was scrambling to find some treasury bills to acquire for the inventory at her financial institution. She managed to gather up a couple near the end of the day when she did the calculations to figure out what the yields were on them. She thought she had done it wrong. She did it over and over, and it kept coming up the same number, negative. Negative yields on treasury instruments. In other words, lending money, you have to pay to lend money. That's just not normal. And in fact, I heard that story several different times, that yields on some instruments, treasuries, very safe instruments, have actually dipped into negative territory. That's weird. That means that you are borrowing money and you are paid to borrow money. That would be action of the Federal Reserve creating that kind of an environment, but it cannot last. The forces of supply and demand will eventually come to bear along with what is called the equation of exchange, and that situation will be corrected. The longer it takes to correct it, the more likely we are to have a strong recovery. The sooner the markets correct it, the more likely any recovery is going to be clipped off. Now, the first thing that I'm going to do today in this class is I am going to show you how to calculate a yield on a very simple kind of debt instrument, a real debt instrument. What is cool about this exercise is that later in the course, I'll be showing you fancy formulas, and you'll be moving your fingers over your financial calculators at high speed and all that. But it's all really the same thing as I'm doing here, just fancier versions of it. And the underlying principle that you will see here is so thorough that it will apply whether I'm talking about the simplest financial instrument, debt instrument, or the most complex mind ripper I could do in a grad course. The same underlying principle shines through, and you'll see it here. Guaranteed. And so let me show you something. Remember what I said about debt instruments. They will all have a face value, the face. They'll all have a coupon rate, which is a percent of the face. and they will all have a time to maturity. And I pointed out one that the book doesn't bring up right now, but it does later, is the covenants. Every debt instrument does have covenants of one sort or another. Some of them are quite adverse to the investor. So an adverse covenant. Let's say a covenant existed in an IBM bond, an IBM 8% bond. There's a covenant in it that you buy the bond from IBM in its primary offering of debt. You buy the bond, and so you expect from now until the time of maturity, let's say 2029, you are going to get $80 a year. Why 80? Because it's 8% of face value, which we will assume is always $1,000, unless I say otherwise. Okay, so you expect for the next 20 years to get 8%. Well, suppose that interest rates start falling, and interest rates on debt of the risk level of an IBM bond fall to 5%. IBM would really love to get rid of you because it has to pay you $80 a year. If it could refi, it would get $50. It would have to pay only $50 a year. So it would love to refi. If it has issued a callable bond, it can do that to you. It can just simply say, oh, we're calling the bonds. Here's your $1,000. Sorry. Okay. Reinvest. Please reinvest with us at 5%. You're going to say, wait a minute, you sucker. I was getting $80 a year. Now you're saying I'm going to get only $50 if I buy another round from you? Yeah. Well, kiss my ass. No, kiss ours, because you can't. Anything else you buy is going to be at 5% coupon too. So you see, that callability provision would be adverse to you as a covenant in the bond contract. That means that for his purposes, he's going to expect IBM to grease his fingers a little bit if they want him to buy one of their callables, because it does have an adversity to it. Whenever there's, think about it this way. Suppose you, what kind of cereal do you like?
Cheerios.
Good choice. Cheerios. Suppose that every 1,000th box of Cheerios has a scorpion in it. Okay, you're going to want them to give you a little bit of an extra reward to buy their damn cereal, because you might wake up somewhere, oh, hello, bad news. Okay, see, whenever there's some kind of an adversity to an instrument, you're going to expect to be rewarded for buying that adversity, for jumping into that adversity. So covenants can give you, can be in there that would affect the price of the bond. Ideally, normally, if the coupon rate is right on the money of what the prevailing interest rate is for that type of risk, you should pay $1,000 for a bond, because that's what you're going to get back at the end, and you're going to get interest along the way that's commensurate with the risk. But covenants can affect that. Covenants can affect that. So can, after the bond is issued, the price will swing based upon what the prevailing interest rate environment does. I'm going to take all that off the table, and I'm going to remind you of the three large classes of debt instruments: bills, notes, and bonds, based upon the time to maturity. Bills, notes, and bonds. Bills are the short ones. They are not necessarily liquid. Short doesn't mean liquid, although oftentimes short is related to better liquidity. But I'm going to bring up, for the purposes of this conversation, a treasury bill, a T-bill. A special one, a one-year T-bill. This special animal, the government issues these by the buttload. That's a technical term, by the way. The buttload. There are huge numbers of these. The government is constantly, literally putting, well, it's not literally. In the old days, back when I was young, back when we had PowerPoints on stone tablets, we didn't have integers. We had just binaries, 0 and 1. We hadn't invented the other numbers yet. We could get by with zeros and ones. Bad times, all you had were the zeros. You could do a lot with zeros. In the old days, literally a treasury auction, paper, the treasury would just put paper on the table. And it would just step back and say, buyers, come and get it. And by buying it, the money was paid, that was the loan. That's the loan. And there would be a price negotiated based upon how many buyers there were and how many buyers there were. If there were lots of buyers, of course, the price would go up. If there weren't many buyers, the price, of course, would be lower. Lower demand, lower price. And but the government would have a fixed amount of money it needed in mind. So if the price went down too much, well, the government would just bring out more paper, set it on the table. Until it had enough sales that it created enough cash for its needs for the week or the month, whatever it was. Now, these treasury auctions of bills are just real short-term cash, and there are different bills. I'm talking about the one-year animal, and it's really out there. This thing is really out there, this kind of a treasury bill, And it's called a discount instrument because it doesn't carry a coupon. You make your interest off the spread between what you pay for it and the face value you get in a year. In a year, you're going to get $1,000 for it. So what you make your interest on one of these discount bonds isn't from the coupons, it's just from the spread between what you pay for it and what the $1,000 at the end. So we are going to go on a brief journey here to a sort of an idealized treasury auction. And I'm going to make these four columns: a price column, and then I'm going to make a face column, and then a dollar interest column, and then a yield column. And the yield is actually really easy to calculate, but you gotta watch it when you do a yield. It's just a little thing that I've noticed people accidentally do a lot of times. Okay. I've got to work on this. Okay. Here we go. I'm going to use you, sir. You are a buyer. I am the Treasury Secretary of the United States, and I'm standing here. And I'm having an auction of treasury bills. These are one-year treasury bills. You buy them at a price, and in a year you get $1,000. So we're going to do this auction. And I'm the treasury secretary. And you come up to me, and you say, I'm kind of looking at your treasury bills, one-year treasury bills here. Well, we got a good supply on there, very high quality, printed on fine quality paper. They've got a filigree, you will notice, around the edges. Would you like to buy one? You look around and you notice that there's a lot of buyers in the room, other ones, you know, tire kickers, you know, they're kicking the tires on some of the different treasury notes and things like that. And you say, well, yeah, there's a lot of pressure here. Maybe I better buy one right now. The price right now, because there's a lot of buyers, the price has been pushed up a little bit. It's $975. And so you say, okay, that would be great. And so I give you your bill, and I hand it to you. I give you your treasury bill, and I give you a little thing. The checkout is over there. So you go over to the checkout counter, and I am the checkout lady, Mabel. Oh, hello there. Let me see your receipt. Oh, yes, you got $975. That's a good boy. Now, remember, in 1 year, you will get your $1,000 check in the mail. Good boy. Cha-ding! And you got it. You've paid $975. Now, were you listening to Mabel? What did she say the face was? Very good. You were listening to Mabel. She likes it when you do that. The face is $1,000. Okay, so now you talk to me. How much dollar interest did you earn? You come back in a year. I'm Mabel. Oh, hi there. Well, yes, you've got your... it's matured today. Very good. You've matured very well. My goodness, you're almost about to shave these days. Okay, so how much interest did you get? $25. Okay, now here we go. Let's calculate the yield. The yield would be the dollar interest over the dollar investment. Dollar interest over dollar investment. Talk to me. How much dollar interest did he make? 25. What was his dollar investment? Very good. Watch, do not put $1,000 there. Boy, that bunches my boxers. It's 975. Okay, now calculate it. What do you say? What's the yield on this? Yield, by the way, is a fancy way of saying interest rate. Okay? Yes. 2.56%. Okay. Well, spank me, Jesus. You have just done your first yield calculation. You could go to the finance singles bar now. You can get a date. Okay. He's got to use the word yield, though, because when the word yield means that they know that he's hot.
Educated.
Hot. Educated is hot at a finance singles bar. Go with the older ladies. You look like cougar bait. Where the hell was I? You gotta focus, for God's sake, please. Okay, now you think, well, that worked out real well. I mean, the government didn't default. Well, of course the government won't default. There's no risk. The government will never default on its debt. How do I know that? Know that? Well, they'll just attack another country if they need the money. My God, look what we did to Iraq. And if they don't want to attack somebody, the Fed will just print the money and give it to you. I mean, that's how we do it anyway. No, you're not going to get a default. So it's very no risk. You just made $25 for giving up your consumption of that $975 for 1 year. The opportunity cost of the foregone consumption is the yield on a risk-free debt instrument. The opportunity cost of foregone consumption is the yield on a risk-free debt instrument. You're just being rewarded for giving up your money for a year. Okay, so you thought that was very cool. So you decide that you're going to do that one again. So you decide you're going to come to a treasury auction again. And this time, I'm there again, of course. Mabel's over here waiting to check you out. I'm standing here. Hi, I'm the treasury secretary. What could we get for you today? And you say, well, I like those treasury bills. That worked out really well. You paid it off. It was a very smooth transaction and all that kind of stuff. And I said, well, that's very nice. Here we go. Why don't you buy one again? You look around the room and you notice there aren't a whole lot of people here. $975, you bought that last year at that. Wait a minute, you son of a running capitalist dog. What do you mean? No. Well, shit. We wouldn't say it like that. I mean, the treasury secretary, he's got to be respectable. $950. Fine. You drive a hard bargain, but $950. Here's your receipt. Ka-chung. Take it over to Mabel. Oh, there you are again. Well, how nice. Oh, my goodness, you have grown up strapping. My goodness, yes, indeed. I have a very nice daughter. Maybe you'd like to meet her. Yes, indeed. And that'll be $950. Cha-ching! $950. You walk away with your treasury, sir. You come back in a year and you cash it in. Well, yes, here you are back, yes. Okay, so what did you say you paid for it? Now, what's the face? What is always the face? 1,000. It will always be 1,000. I will ask you this again in 50 years. I will come up, even if you're dead and in your grave, I will call into your grave. How much is the face? And you'll say 1,000. Well, actually, you'll say 1,000 because you'll be 6 feet under. But it will always be 1,000. Okay, so how much interest did you make this time? How much interest did you make this time? $50. So now let's calculate the yield this time. Yield is dollar interest over dollar investment. Dollar interest over dollar investment. So what was the dollar interest, did you say? 50. What was the dollar investment this time? So what's the yield this time? 5.26%. Well, there's something strange. You've just seen the first principle of finance. What happened to the yield as the price went down? Yes, always. It can be from the simplest debt instrument like this one to the most complex mother you could imagine. The principal holds. As the price goes down, the yield goes up. As the price goes up, the yield goes down. No matter how complicated the instrument, if it is all other things being held constant, the price and the yield will be inversely related. And I tell people this. It's actually, there's kind of a complexity in this when you listen to financial markets. And I honestly, to this day, sometimes I ask a question. Just a few days ago, there was this statement on this financial news network: Treasury notes fell today. What do you mean they fell? Did they like run too fast and trip on a financial pothole? Or what were you talking about? Was it the price that fell or the yield that fell? Because we really care about the yield. That's what we're excited about. But what markets tell us is prices. Markets tell us prices, and then the yield is implied from the price. See how the yield is actually implied from the price of the instrument? So when these financial reporting services say, Treasury notes fell today, which are you talking about? The price fell or the yield fell? Well, I didn't find out until later. They meant the price fell. Normally, that's what they'll mean when they say the treasuries rose today, or the bond index fund rose today. That would mean that the price rose. But if the price rises, the interest rate falls. Okay? So just keep that in mind. This is the first of the two principles for the day, is the inverse relationship between price and yield. It is lockstep. It is a mathematical phenomenon. It's not really even a financial phenomenon. It's just a mathematical thing. Now I'm going to take you on a little journey here with this whole thing. These treasury yields, if the Federal Reserve wants to help the economy, it would certainly like to try to keep interest rates low. One of the ways that it could do that is to show up at the Treasury auctions. Be the big demander. Buy, buy, buy. Which would, of course, as they bought, would push prices up, which would hold the yields down. And if government debt has low yield, that means the corporations, which compete for capital with the government, would be able to borrow at lower rates, too. Okay, well, let's take you on a little bit of a thought journey here. Let me look at just a typical company. And it's considering projects. Now we're coming back to financial management. And it's thinking about projects. And on the slate that are going to be considered, for investment are projects A, B, and C. And the financial jockeys in the company have worked out the rates of return on these projects. In other words, what is the rate of return that is being implied by the cash outflows versus the cash inflows? And in this example, we have for the board's consideration, or for the executive management's consideration, three projects that we could take. Now, we're credit worthy. We could borrow enough to do any of these or all of these projects. Trust me, this is actually a very simple idea. Okay, project A, the calculations we've done, is 16% rate of return, annual rate of return. The internal rate of return is really good. In other words, the cash inflows are so big compared to the cash outflows that if I discounted those cash inflows and compared them to the cash outflows, I'd have to discount it at a very high rate, 16%. Good investment. In other words, this is like buying a stock. We expect about a 16% return on investment from it. Project B and C are just like stocks we're considering buying too. We're just thinking about essentially a portfolio of common stocks, which ones we're going to put into it. Okay, Project B. Let's say that Project B has a rate of return of 8%. And Project C has a rate of return of 4%. Now, the first thing I have to do is get your thinking right. Whenever you are considering anything in this life, first of all, you have to make sure you're considering all the costs. Don't play around and just look at direct costs. Make sure you know you're talking about opportunity costs too. If you make more off it than you pay for it, you do it. Even if it's a dollar, even if it's 50 cents, if you make more from it than you pay for it, you do it. That's how you win long. That's how you win long. You always, it doesn't matter if it's some giant amount or some small amount. You just keep pushing. You just keep hammering. Look, at a table when I would play in Vegas, I didn't care if I won just a little bit. As long as I kept winning, I kept playing. A dollar here, $2 there, a dollar there, $5 over there. By the end of the night, I had enough for a great meal and some friendship that was more attractive than I deserved. My friends, I got my ass kicked, man. I went for the big time and I got ass kicked. You see, you play the numbers. You play the numbers. That's how it works in business. As long as the marginal revenue is greater than the marginal cost, you build that unit of the product. Even if it's one penny more, you build that unit. Here, let's say that this company can borrow money at 3%. It can borrow money at 3%. Now talk to me. It can borrow money at 3% a year. Is it going to invest in Project A that yields 16% a year? Oh, yeah, duh. Yeah, here's a rule. That's a good project. How about B? Is it going to invest in B? Sure. How about C? Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I get more off C than I'm paying for C? Are you kidding me? Sure. Absolutely. And there's another reason you'll see in a minute here. Okay, now, suppose that the Fed backs off and interest rates start to rise on treasury bills, which means that companies have to borrow at higher rates too to attract investors. You could have gone to a company and borrowed. So if the Fed is offering, let's say, 4%, or five, let's say the Fed's offer, Treasury's offering 6% on a perfectly safe instrument. I'd have to offer something more than that because mine isn't perfectly safe. So the environment that the Treasury is creating with its interest, the yields on its instruments, will drive, to a large extent, the environment of interest rates that businesses are facing. So let us say that the interest rate environment goes from 3% up to 6%. For me to borrow money as a company, I can still borrow as much as I want. I'm creditworthy. I'm good for it. But I would have to pay 6% based upon the risk profile of my company. Okay, so now we are going to 6%. First of all, will I embrace Project A? Will I take it? Absolutely. It's a winner. How about Project B? Uh-huh, yeah. Project C? Nope. Gone. Economic activity is slowing down because of the high interest rate environment. See how the interest rate environment is actually going to, in a real material sense, alter the landscape of projects that are being done by businesses in the country and the employment of people. Based upon how many there were a lot of people who could be employed with Project C. They won't be employed now because Project C has been rejected because it does not meet the hurdle rate of 6%. Now let's go and let's say that things begin to get really ugly and the interest rates rise from 6% up to 10%. Will the company still take on Project A? Absolutely. Project B? Another one bites the dust. Project C is history. So you see what's happening. As the interest rate environment goes up, companies embrace fewer and fewer projects. Fewer and fewer projects meet their hurdle rates. There's something even deeper, something even nastier that's going on here in this kind of an environment. A company, really, in a material way, is a portfolio of securities. Each security is one of the projects that it's taking on. Look at what's happening as the interest rate environment is going upward. The balance of risk of this company is going higher and higher. This company is actually what I call being driven towards the Hail Marys. This company is being driven towards the high return projects, which are the high risk projects. Which, of course, exacerbates the situation because just because you take on a project that has a high expected return, if you're taking on a lot of risk with that, which you would have to for the high expected return, you've got a higher and higher probability of getting your ass kicked instead of winning. That's just the way it is. So what is happening is that this company is actually becoming riskier as a portfolio of assets as it is being driven upward on the return scale, which means that there is a higher probability that the company would actually go into bankruptcy or have major solvency problems because its portfolio is riskier and riskier. So in other words, there's a death spiral going on here with an interest rate environment that's going upward. As the interest rate environment rises, you're getting fewer and fewer projects being taken on, which of course causes unemployment, so there aren't as many people who have money to buy stuff, which of course makes the companies even worse off. But then you've also got the company becoming riskier and riskier because the only projects it's taking on are the ones that have a higher probability of losing, as well as a good return. They also have an expected return. They also have a good chance of losing. So you have an environment where business activity is slowing, employment is being lost, companies are becoming riskier, and therefore you'll see more bankruptcies, which means, but as bankruptcies go up, the willingness of investors to invest is going to decline, which will mean that the prices of debt will go down, which will mean that the yields on debt will go, which way? Up, good, up. But as the yields on debt go up, fewer projects will be taken on, so you get into a death spiral. This is what Keynesian economics was strongly trying to address, is that unlike the classical economists who said, well, everything corrects itself in the long run, yeah, the long run could take a very long time and there could be massive destruction of economic infrastructure as the system re-equilibrated. It is far better in the Keynesian view, and I'm not promoting the Keynesian view, but it's far better in the Keynesian view for the government through, in this case, the Federal Reserve, to step in and just start monetizing to pour money into the economy. Now, here's the last thing. What is the price of money? Do you know what the price of money is? Well, wait a minute. Isn't money the price? Sorry. No. The price of money is the interest rate. The price of money is the interest rate. See, how do I know that? This is my last one of these. When this is gone, I starve to death. You see, if I give this thing up, I'm giving up my consumption. But if I give it up to a bank, what's the bank going to pay me? Some interest rate. So that interest rate it's paying me is my reward for giving this up. That means that essentially the interest rate that a bank would pay me is the rental rate of my money. Interest rates are the rental rate of money of various degrees of risk. Interest rates are the rental rate of money of various degrees of risk. That's just how it works. So, essentially, when the Fed goes in and prints money like there's no tomorrow, goes to the auctions and buys up, becomes a strong demander at Treasury auctions, that pushes the price of the treasuries up, which pushes the yields down. So essentially, in a very real sense, as the Fed pours money into the economy through the government and through other instrumentalities like the banks, what it is essentially doing is it is lowering the rental rate on money. And by lowering the rental rate on money, the theoretical result is to bring down the hurdle rate that businesses have to have on projects they embrace. And so as the Fed is trying to drive down the yields on debt, on federal debt, it is essentially trying to bring down the yields on corporate debt too, so that the corporations will be able to take on more and more projects that are marginally lower in internal rate of return, and thereby bring the economy back from its death spiral. That's the theory. Does it work? Actually, it does, at a price, but it actually has, historically, it has worked. Unfortunately, it doesn't work instantly, and that's what we're seeing now, is there's masses of money poured in through those economic stimulus package and all that. Well, it didn't make the economy better instantly, but it eventually does, but it has to take time to work its way through the system. Right now, the system is still credit locked. Even though the government can borrow at insanely low rates, even though banks can borrow from each other at insanely low rates, even though the banks can borrow from the Fed at the discount window at insanely low rates, consumers and businesses are still sucking wind. The banks are still charging very high rates, and they are holding very high standards, so that it is very hard at the consumer and business level to get money. And until it is easier, that hurdle rate is going to stay up here, and we're still not going to come into a serious recovery until the banks begin to be able to articulate their winnings down to the level of the businesses and consumers. Essentially, a bank will borrow money at, let's say, a low rate. Let's put the rate right now at 0.5%. The bank will then lend that money at a higher rate, let's say 8%. That spread is how the bank makes its money. That spread is how the bank makes its money. By serving as the intermediary that will connect up the surplus economic units with the deficit economic units. But you see, the problem is that if it's borrowing money at a very low rate, theoretically competitive pressures would force it to drop the lending rate down to attract business. If one bank didn't, certainly there would be other banks who would be willing to. In the system as it is right now, it ain't happening. That spread there is staying very large. And as long as it stays that large, as long as we still have that freeze up in the intermediary system, this process of companies being able to take on more and more projects and more safer projects, isn't going to start up in any material way. So what you need to do if you want to be good at predicting where the economy is going to be, one of the best ways is to see how these markets, the financial intermediaries, are unfreezing. The conditions are there for the thaw. These banks are able to get money at stupidly low rates. When you start seeing the banks getting off their high horse with perfect credit, requiring perfect credit, and even then still charging stupidly high rates, then you'll begin to see the recovery picking up speed and the business is starting to hire again. Now, what does that matter to you? What will it be? About 2 years that you will have to have a job? Let's just hope it all works out by then, because otherwise, if it were still frozen up like this, you have a very good chance of having your first job after you graduate be, may I help you, McPlease. Okay? It's serious. This is dead serious, real for real people, that we need to get this disintermediation broken so that the spread begins to go this way. Here's the problem. The Fed can't keep that there forever. There's pressures on it. The global capital markets are going to get sick of these low interest rates. The inflation is going to begin to sneak in and start to push up all interest rates, including Treasury interest rates. So sooner or later, this cat's going to start on the move upward. It will. That's just normal. That happens. It happens every time in an economic recovery. The problem is we want a darned economic recovery before it starts to move up. We need to get this unfrozen moving down before this starts moving up. Because if that starts moving up aggressively, which it probably will within about a year and a half, year to year and a half, we don't have any kind of an economic recovery at all. That's how you marry finance and economics, and you begin to understand that the Federal Reserve, the federal government, these instrumentalities you see coming to bear right now, they are working on an old, old principle. I'll tell you this. I'll tell you a secret. You know what the best way to predict the future is? Don't say, I'll look to history. Don't do that. You create the future. That's the best way to predict the future. Now, what we need is for our Fed and our government to create the future for the financial system by finding a way to break this deadlock that's happening here so that the finance part can take over and repair the economy through the economics of rational behavior of the agents. Let's bring good old greed back to bear, but let's make sure that those banks don't keep all the greed for themselves. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.